The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
This is Jackson Brown, and you're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, this is John from Five for Fighting. You got my buddy, my longtime friend, the lovely Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Donald Fagen.
And this is Walter Becker. You know, Steely Dan.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, this is Jake Slichter.
John Munson.
Dan Wilson. We are Semisonic.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge, and you're listening to my friend, Nicole Sandler.
Hey, how you doing out there? This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, everybody, this is Pat Monahan from the band Train, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler, my favorite on-air personality.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Music to my ears.
All right, since today we have Dave Mason on the show, I thought I'd start with a fun musical intro. But before we get there, we got a lot to talk about. So, welcome to a Friday. It all centers around what's happening this weekend. This weekend, it's like the stars collided or something. Let me tell you about all the anniversaries and all the days that are of some import that happened this weekend. Beginning today, today is the second anniversary of Joe Biden's inauguration. So that's something, right? That's today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, January 21st. You know what? I'm going to end on that. We'll come back to Saturday in a second. Sunday is, first of all, the Chinese New Year, the Lunar New Year. Sunday starts the Year of the Rabbit. We say goodbye to the Year of the Tiger. Big celebrations everywhere. Sunday also marks the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade. It ruled that a person may choose to have an abortion until a fetus becomes viable. It's based on the right to privacy that's contained in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. Sadly, of course, today's extreme court overturned Roe just shy of this 50th anniversary, and his decision leaked in May, just weeks before it would be officially announced. Today, I bring that part up because today we learned that the court's investigators were unable to identify just who leaked the decision. I think I know, but I have no proof. So, you know, don't take my word that it was Samuel Alito. Just saying. But we talked about that yesterday. Now let's go back to what tomorrow is. Tomorrow is January 21st. Two things happened tomorrow, 13 years ago tomorrow. First, earlier in the day, the Supreme Court handed down its decision on Citizens United, basically saying, you know, money is speech. You know, people are corporations. Corporations are people, my friend. Yeah. The court ruled 5-4 that the free speech clause of the First Amendment prohibits the government from restricting independent expenditures for political campaigns by corporations. That includes nonprofit groups, labor unions, and other associations, basically throwing the door wide open to dark money and unbridled super PACs. So it was a dagger in the heart of our freedom of speech. That happened 13 years ago, tomorrow in the afternoon. Few hours later came the big dagger as we learned that Air America Radio had filed for bankruptcy and was shutting down, ceased operations 13 years ago tomorrow. January 21st, 2013 especially, bad day for our right to free speech. So that brings us to our first guest. If you're here for Dave Mason, stick around. We will start that in about 15 minutes. But I want to bring on my friend and the one of the guys who runs Progressive Voices, John Sinton, who was the original program director of Air America Radio. Hey, John.
Hi, Nicole. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. That was a long, convoluted intro. But, so 13 years ago tomorrow, Air America Radio went dark. And you were not there. You had already been gone. You were there at the beginning of Air America. So I wanted to get your thoughts on how far we've come or not in the last 13 years.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a fair question. You know, I think by virtue of Rachel, Rachel Maddow, who, you know, has turned out to be a big star, no surprise to any of us. And by virtue of the fact that Al Franken was in the United States Senator, in the United States Senate, that we launched him from Air America. So I think that was good. Excuse me. Mark Maron, our former original morning guy, kind of was the first successful big podcast that wasn't a true crime kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, I'm a silver lining guy. I guess I can always find something to be positive about. But the truth of the matter, Nicole, is that the right wing conservative reactionary talk radio, you know, mostly following Rush Limbaugh, you know, that was I guess we were never really going to catch up. Mm-hmm. Now, we did debut on over 100 radio stations on March 31st of 2004. And, you know, Al was on The Daily Show and Letterman and Leno and Liz Winstead, who I had hired to do the entertainment side of it, and Shelley Lewis, who we brought in to do the news side of it. We're on the cover of the Washington Post Sunday magazine. And I think Shelley was on the Today Show, which she used to be the executive of which she used to be the executive producer. So, you know, we got a lot of stuff done. And yet it doesn't feel like we got anything done. And so I'll just tell you a quick story. I spent all of 2003 raising money to get Air America started and to pay talent and, you know, facility fees and all that kind of stuff. And it really took a year, raised a bunch of money. And when one of the people that we raised money from turned out to be a fraud, a guy who is now in federal prison, by the way.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, he defrauded any number of other people after us. And, you know, I think shame on us and shame on everybody else who ever trusted him afterwards. Anyway, he came to us very highly recommended and seemed to be well vetted. And we were going at 100 miles an hour. Shouldn't have taken the money that he, it turns out, he stole from the Boys and Girls Clubs of I want to say the Bronx.
Oh, man.
Anyway, it was a nightmare. And so as the founding president and creator of Air America Radio, that kind of all fell on my shoulders. And so we were turning the vending machines upside down to shake out the change and see if we couldn't make payroll. And, you know, our evening host was the actor and comedian Janine Garofalo.
Right.
And so one day I'm walking down Lower Fifth Avenue, and I mean, I've got a hangdog expression and things are not good. We've been on the air for all of 5 weeks. Our audience numbers are tremendous. We're doing about 3.5 million people at any given moment. And, you know, maybe not competitive with Rush's 12 million people, but we were on our way there. And anyway, I'm walking down Lower Fifth Avenue, and I'm kind of hangdog. And I practically walk into Janine, who's a little tiny thing, and she's walking her two giant dogs. And she goes, "Hey, what's the matter?" And I told her, "Well, this guy Evan has gotten us in all kinds of trouble. I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep this thing in the air." And she grabbed me by the lapels. It was wintertime. Remember very distinctly. It was cold in New York City. It was actually a cold late April day, which is unusual. And she grabs me by the lapels and she says, "Look, if this thing dies tomorrow, we kicked down the door. And we've got good people out here. And this will not be the end of progressive media." And, you know, it turns out she was right.
Yeah. Well, yes, she was. But progressive media is still, you know, the fact that we're not on the public airwaves anymore, for the most part. I mean, there are a few stations still out there, but the number is dwarfed. It's minute compared to the number of radio stations that air this right wing hate talk 24/7. So we're on the internet. We're, you know, you left Air America. What year did you leave?
I think I left at the beginning of 2000. My deal with Al Franken was that I'd stay as long as he did.
Ah.
And so when he declared, because we were on commercial radio stations, we had to take him off the air. And that's when I left. It was early 2007.
Right. And it was long before I got there. I was just there in the final year in the, you know, picking up the ashes of Air America, doing my show from here in Florida. So I was never part of it, really. But I came in at the tail end. But I was a listener from the beginning. And, you know, it's a shame that, again, bad people spoil things, but there was the start of something really great. And it's a shame that nobody else, that the big money interests on the left do not support progressive media. They do on the right. Our counterparts on the right, they're all over it. That's why there's so much. That's why they're so present all over the airwaves and all over the internet. And we're just left fending for ourselves. So it's a scrappy kind of thing we have going here. It's sad because there is money on the left. They just don't.
Yeah. Well, our big joke, as this guy named Javier Sardé and I were traveling the country raising money, was that, well, we know a lot of rich liberals. It's just apparently that none of them have any money. We could, you know, we had some wonderful investors like Rob Reiner. Hollywood was pretty good for us. And even on the East Coast, you know, George Soros put a little money in. But the big money, I had gone to Chicago a few months before we debuted at the invitation of Bill Clinton. And he was giving a speech in one of the Hyatts in Chicago. And so we stood toe-to-toe backstage for about 15 minutes, which was a very intense experience, I have to say. And he, it was mostly lip service. And I had been with Hillary sometime before that in D.C. And she was like, let me get you with Bill because he knows all these guys with money. And so anyway, he said, oh, yeah, I think we can get this done. But, you know, the Ron Burkle money never materialized. And, you know, fortunately for us, Hollywood, Norman Lear and folks like that, Larry David, those folks stepped up. And that's what got us started. And then ultimately, when our bad investor forced us into the first bankruptcy, we were Carl Ginsburg, who was our COO. He and I were able to wrangle a bunch of money from some really wonderful investors like Rob Glaser, who kind of invented streaming with a company called Real Networks.
Oh, sure. And
he had worked for Microsoft at some time, and he left, and they accused him of stealing that technology from them. And he proved in court that they didn't own it, and he did, and they owed him $700 million.
Wow.
So Rob, who was already rich, got a lot richer, and he stepped up in a big way.
Oh,
and,
good. Well,
yeah, there's not much that you can say about Rob, except that he and the people that he brought along repaid the Boys and Girls Clubs and kept us on the air.
Oh, wow.
So really lovely people. But I think that the idea was really valid. But the thing, Nicole, was that we were in this weird space in time that was right before Internet 2.0. So the Internet wasn't quite ready to stream audio and video in a way that was meaningful and fast enough. There just wasn't the bandwidth.
Right.
And at the same time, we could only get on AM radio stations. And they, as you know, are the province of the 65 plus.
Yep.
And our audience was much younger than typical AM radio. As I say, we debuted on 100 radio stations, and that was very helpful. But we were in this weird moment in time that was before streaming was viable, and smartphones had weren't even on the market yet.
I think Jobs rolled out the
iPhone in 2007. So I think it was a combination of great
being too
idea,
early. Yeah.
Good execution. People seem to love Air America. And really, why do businesses fail? They get undercapitalized.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, that was it. But again, had we not had the expense of being on all those radio stations and just been able to put up a streaming service, you know, I think things would have been different. But we were ahead of our time.
Right. And now you run along with George and Reed. You run Progressive Voices, progressivevoices.com, with a lot of the same people that were on Air America. Stephanie wasn't on Air America, but you got Stephanie, you got Tom, you got Randy, followed by me, Leslie Marshall, and it goes on. And it's a, you got an app. It's not easy, but it's at least something, right? We got something out there.
That's true. And it's, you know, we have wonderful partners at TuneIn. Mm-hmm. And we do about 800,000 unique listeners a month, which is, you know, which is not a pittance.
No.
It's pretty good. And, you know, but it's... and it is kind of Air America 2.0,
right.
Or maybe it's 3.0, because so much of the talent is former Air Americans. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we do it as it's a .com, but Progressive Voices Institute is a nonprofit, 501c3. And that's been helpful to us because it allows foundations to support us a little bit and help us, you know, buy the technology that we need and keep it on the air. For Reed and George and me, this wasn't a, hey, I think we can get rich doing this.
No.
You know, we had already learned that lesson. This is not someplace you're going to get rich. But we did feel an obligation to continue to represent progressive values on the media.
And it's great that you exist. Look, I was doing my own thing since the day Air America went off the air 13 years ago tomorrow. I just moved online. Ustream at the time, it wasn't even YouTube then, doing regular daily streaming. It was on Ustream, and listeners followed, and you know, and then you brought me on board at Progressive Voices, what, 6 years ago now, almost. And so I it was 2016 or 2015, I think, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think 2015. I was going to say it was more like 7 years, because you maybe. And I both had other stuff happen in between.
Right.
And that
yes.
Seems
yeah,
like
it might have been 7 years ago now. But anyway, yeah. I'm so grateful to have the outlet, and I didn't want tomorrow's anniversary to go by unrecognized, because Air America Radio was a big deal. It was really important. I just, if you Google Air America Radio, it will bring up really early, like Rachel Maddow, when she was just doing the radio show before she got hair down to her shoulders, kind of on reliable sources with Howie Kurtz and some Michael Medved or some right wing host. But there's Rachel, very young, very innocent looking. And you found her, really, and brought her to us, and you're keeping it going. And I know there's not a lot of reward there financially and everything, but I wanted to recognize the work you did and thank you for it. And thank you for the outlet, and thank you for making this outlet available to us.
Well, you're awfully sweet. And I just, you know, on the one hand, I have a lot of gratitude to you and to all of the talent that has stuck it out and known what's really good for America, and the fact that we need to represent these progressive voices, which is why we named it what we did. And and to my partners, George and Reed, you know, it's we're full of gratitude. We of course we wish that we had 20 million listeners and that, you know, that we were all getting rich. But this is definitely the next best thing.
Definitely. Definitely. And I hate that I have to cut this short, but I do, because I taped this interview with Dave Mason on Monday, and it's a set length, and I got to get to it, or we're going to run over, as I know I tend to do occasionally, and I don't mean to. But John Sinton, he's the guy behind Air America, Air America and Progressive Voices. And I just wanted to recognize the contribution, because it's really important, and thank you
very
for
sweet.
It.
Hey, Nicole, thank you so much.
Oh,
I appreciate
you.
Your having me.
All right, John, we'll talk again soon when I have
Indeed.
More time. All right, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
You bet.
John Sinton, everybody. And go check out progressivevoices.com. If that's not how you're listening to us, you get it's like a whole radio station. It's just we're all doing it from wherever we are, and doing it on, you know, virtually instead of at a place. This is 21st century radio, I suppose. All right. Now, the moment we've been waiting for. Dave Mason, this interview, I'm going to play it in just a moment, We recorded it Monday morning. So David Crosby was still alive. So David Crosby will not be mentioned in this interview, though you'll hear we do talk a little bit about Christine McVie and Jeff Beck, both who recently died. The name of Dave Mason's tour is the Endangered Species Tour, for obvious reasons, and we'll get into that as well. So I just wanted to mention that. And also, I got to tell you this, because, you know, when I do an interview, I don't edit. When I pre-tape something, I don't edit it in advance, like, because something didn't sound right. So you'll hear, we get off to a kind of a slow start. I'm thinking, oh, shit, he really does not want to be here. It starts, the worst thing for an interviewer is when you're interviewee answers in like yes, no answers. Like, okay, this is going to be pulling teeth. And that's how it felt at the beginning. I'm thinking, oh shit. All right. Well, this is not going to go well. But you'll see throughout the course of the interview, he warms up. And by the end of it, we're buds. I'm going to see him Wednesday night. I think he just needed to know that I wasn't some schlocky radio DJ, you know. I don't know. But maybe he just woke up. It was early. It was 11 o'clock Monday morning, which for a rock star is early. And as you'll see, he's on the bus. All right. So with that, with no further ado, let's roll the tape. And now I just got to start the tape. Here we go. I can't tell you how excited I am for today's guest. I've been listening to Dave Mason's music since, well, junior high and high school. I grew up in South Florida, and Dave Mason was part of that soundtrack, and I'm so honored to welcome him to the show today. Sir, welcome. It looks like you're on a bus.
Yeah, on my bus, yes.
You're getting ready to embark on yet another tour. It's the Endangered Species Tour, yes?
Yes.
And are you headed from the West Coast where you live out to the East Coast where the tour begins?
We are in, right now I'm in West Jefferson, North Carolina.
Oh boy. So we're actually taping this on Monday morning. It's January 16th. The tour kicks off on the 19th, right? Just in a couple of days in North Carolina. Yes. Oh, in Atlanta. Atlanta, at the City Winery. Yes.
In Atlanta. Yes.
And you'll be hitting my area at the Broward Performing Arts Center on the 25th. Then a bunch of dates throughout Florida. Then you also go on a tour, on a cruise, the On the Blue Cruise, for a few days, where you get to hang out with other amazing artists like Justin Hayward. And who else is on that tour? Do you know on that cruise?
I have no idea.
No idea. Well, I do know some friends of mine, a band called the Young Dubliners, who are based in L.A., old friends of mine from my days in L.A. radio, are also on that cruise. So I know they're fun, and I'm looking at it longingly. But this is not new for you. You've been touring since you started in the music industry over 50 years ago, yeah?
Over 60 years.
Wow. And that's, is do you tour out of love or do you tour out of necessity these days?
Well, at this point, it's a little bit of both.
Right. I guess the internet has kind of, has changed things in some ways for the better, but maybe, I don't know. What do you think? Is it better or worse for the artist?
It's worse.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you have Pandora and Spotify that just are not paying the correct royalties to artists. So we are left with playing live, which I've been doing it since I was 16. So
you have been. Can we talk a bit about your history? Because you were just a youngster when you had your first big band. Your first band was actually Traffic, yeah?
It was the first commercially successful band. It's not the first band.
Gotcha. So how did you start? You were born in England. These days you live over here, but you started there. And how did you get your start?
Started with a band called the band called the Jaguars when I was 16.
Wow.
And then that progressed into different incarnations and met up with Jim Capote, had a band called the Sapphires. And he was the lead singer, sort of did a pretty good Presley impersonation. And turned out Jim could play drums.
Mm-hmm.
So formed a couple of different bands, the Hellions, the Deep Feeling. And out of that, we got to know Steve Winwood, and that evolved into Traffic.
Wow. Now, you didn't stay with Traffic all that long. You were there and you left and you came back. Was that a personality thing? Was it that you were young? What was all the turmoil within Traffic?
Well, most of that is in the book, which will be coming out in May.
Yes, I am looking forward to that. I'm going to ask you about that.
So basically, I was originally, first off, I'd left after the first album. I was just, there was too much success too fast for me. And I couldn't deal with it. So I took a break.
And so it was on, was it the first Traffic album that Feeling All Right was on, an instant first hit, or no?
All Right. First, the Traffic's biggest hit was on the first album, which is the first song I'd ever written, called, it's a little bit of a nursery rhyme song called Hole in My Shoe.
Yeah.
Feeling All Right was part of the second album.
Gotcha. And it was after the second album that you left. Who is that in your lap? Is that a little dog?
A Star. Yes. Yeah,
hi, Star. Oh, a dog makes everything better, don't they? I can't imagine being on the road with that one, but there you go. I love it.
I have two girls, my wife and the dog.
Uh-huh. Is that a Maltese?
It is.
Yeah, I grew up with Maltese. Very sweet. Oh, I love seeing that. I'm sorry, I digress. I see a dog and I go all soft and mushy. So after the second album was released, you left the band, but Feeling All Right blew up. It actually didn't even really blow up until Joe Cocker covered it sometime later, right? Or do I have that wrong?
Cocker's really the reason it's got so many, you know, it became so successful. And then after Cocker, it's over 50 major artists that have done it. And every bar band and garage band plays it. So,
in fact, you've played. Dave Mason is our guest. You've played and with so many artists on their records. They've played on yours. And there's a story about Michael Jackson singing on one of your songs. And did he say it was because Diana Ross covered "Feeling All Right"? Did I read that somewhere?
The Jackson 5, the Jackson 5 did Feeling All Right. They recorded it.
Oh, wow. Okay, and so that's how he knew you, and you asked him, you were in a recording in a neighboring studio?
We were at the same recording studio. It was just in a different room, and he was on a break, and I needed a harmony on something, and he was like, sure, no problem. Came over and sang.
So that was during in the days of Jackson 5 when he was still young, or was he already Michael Jackson?
No, I think they were in the other studio. It was either cutting Thriller or
oh wow, yeah. I read it was Thriller that he was working on, but you know better than I. So you left Traffic when you decided to step back. You started playing with other artists. You wound up touring with Delaney and Bonnie. How did that partnership come together, because you spent a lot of time with them, right?
Well, I played with Delaney and Bonnie for about a year,
Mm-hmm.
And got to meet them when I first moved here in 69 and became friends with them. They were part of the LA music scene along with Leon and Jim Gordon. And a lot of those guys were just, they were session players here.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny Bonney, I worked with for, I think, about a year or so. We went, even toured Europe, but toured U.S. with the, open for a lot of the Blind Faith shows.
Yes. And I like to say that you were sort of Blind Faith adjacent, because it's a lot of intermingling. A lot of people that you had played with, obviously, Steve Winwood in Blind Faith. He had been with you in Traffic. There's a cartoon I came across just recently. It's of a old woman talking to children, saying, "Thus the Yardbirds begat Cream, Spencer Davis Group begat Traffic, Cream and Traffic begat Blind Faith, and Blind Faith begat Derek and the Dominoes," and it goes like that. It was all very incestuous kind of back then, wasn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say Blind Faith begat Derek and the Dominoes. Right. That was just... Eric took most of Delaney's band and formed Derek and the Domino,
which
I was part of.
Right, you were at the beginning. But you weren't on the album, were you?
No. And then also Delaney and Bonney had a huge hit record with my song, Only You Know and I Know.
Oh, yes. A lot of people have had success with your songs. And again, you know, then you went on to work with their daughter. Becca Bramlett was their daughter, was she not?
Becca's the daughter. I didn't go on to work with her. I mean, that's been in more recent.
Mm-hmm.
Here she was. I mean, she was part of the Fleetwood Mac incarnation that I did for a couple of years.
Right. Fleetwood Mac is another, you know, band that's gone through so much. And in fact, you recently, during the pandemic, put out a video. You called yourselves the Quarantines, and you were joined by Mick Fleetwood, and a few of the members of the Doobie Brothers. Sammy Hagar, I'm not quite sure how he fits in this this configuration, but a bunch of great artists got together to do a song via remotely during the pandemic.
I was kept being asked to put, you know, whilst we were all sequestered, do something, since a lot of artists were doing, I guess, performances on the internet and putting it out there, which I really wasn't too fond up for doing. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I can get a few people, friends that I know might want to participate in a version of Feeling All Right. Just a good vibe thing. So, it was, all three of the Doobie Brothers, Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald,
Sammy Hagar, Mick, who I know and have known for some time. And we just decided to put this little version of Feeling All Right, which was obviously done remotely, and everybody did their piece, and then it was all sort of pieced together, and it came together amazingly well, considering we were all scattered all over the place.
Seems I've got to have a change of scene. Every night, have the strangest dream. Prison by the way it might have been. Left here on my own to sort of see well. I've got to leave before I start to scream. Someone locked the door and took the key. Yeah.
Hey, hey,
and I feel that you're good myself.
Oh.
Okay, I'm going to pot this down and just forward a little bit ahead in the video because I got a copyright warning. So let's move back to the interview. Sorry about that. Here we go. It really is. It's wonderful. Now, you also have gone back. I mean, look, you've got this library, this collection of amazing songs that you've written over the years, again, that I grew up with. You went back to the album Alone Again. And
I screwed that up too.
Reimagined it. Tell us about that, please. Why did you decide to
Alone Together?
Alone Together. Alone
Together, I redid as Alone Together Again, mostly.
Together Again.
I mean, it just basically started out with redoing a song called World in Changes that was on there.
Great song.
But completely different from the original. It has a reggae feel. I decided to redo the whole thing, mostly because all those master tapes got burned up in the Universal fire.
Oh, right. A lot of people don't realize that this was a thing. It was, what, 5-6 years ago already. Universal had a collection. They were stored on the Universal lot in California, in Los Angeles, where they kept all the music masters. And there were so many priceless pieces of tape there that all just burned. It's almost unbelievable that could happen. So the masters for Alone Together were part of that. I'm so sorry. That was heartbreaking. The news of that day was just terrifying. And so you decided to re-record everything. Just, is it part to replace it and part to update everything because it had been 50 years?
Well, I redid. They're pretty much except for World in Changes, they're all pretty much the same arrangements, just a little adding different things here and there. John McPhee plays a great banjo on just a song. But basically pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it just, and plus this time I get to own the masters. So,
well, that's the difference. I love the two album covers. What I have up on the screen now is on the left, the original Alone Together album cover, and then the Dave Mason Alone Together Again cover. And there you are. It looks like on the same sort of mountainside, just in a different part of it and a little bit older.
Yeah.
Slightly. People know you, that we know your music, we know your history with Traffic, but what a lot of people may not know are how many other records you played on and riffs that we know. For instance, at the beginning of this song, if this will play, and of course it doesn't want to play, come on. Always, my studio gremlins get me every time. Hold on, I can play it from here, I believe. All right. Hopefully you can hear this. Let's try it this way. Yes? Wow, nothing wants to work this morning. I guess it's early for me. I was going to play. It'll kick in a second. Here we go. Now we hear the 12-string acoustic guitar there before Jimmy's guitar kicks in there. That 12-string acoustic, that's you. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about Jimi Hendrix. In fact, you guys first heard All Along the Watchtower together for the first time? Or he heard it for the first time with you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was somewhere. I think it was a John Wesley Harding album.
Yeah.
It was originally on. So I guess something tweaked him and he decided that he wanted to record it. And yeah, and I guess I finished up the studio with him and that's how all that really happened.
Wow. So what was it like? Did you know that Hendrix was Hendrix when you knew him? Did you think this man is going to be known as the best guitar player in the world?
I had seen him. We may have been there at the same night. I get maybe, or it was a different night. This little club called Scotch of St. James. I think Jimmy had got up and jammed with the band there. He just moved there. So pretty much, there's a lot of great guitar players. There are no more Jimi Hendrixes.
No. Well, and we just lost Jeff Beck as well. And look, again, you're sort of Jeff Beck adjacent, but you never worked with him, did you? You guys have worked with a lot of the same people through the years.
No, I don't know. I don't know him. I've never really met him. I think we may have been on some concerts back when I was with Traffic in the early days in Europe together. But I don't know him. Great guitar player.
Oh, very much so. So as you worked with Hendrix and you worked with a number of other bands, you mentioned briefly you were with Fleetwood Mac. But Fleetwood Mac also, so many people just know them from their biggest incarnation. But they started as a blues band with Peter Green and Oh Well and amazing guitar work. And you played with an incarnation of Fleetwood Mac that was not Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. But did you work with Christine McVie?
I did not. She was part of the album called Time. But no, she had some other guitar player she wanted to play on her stuff.
Oh, no.
It was very pieced. It's all in the book.
Well, tell us about the book. So you're writing a book. It's going to be out, you said, in May?
Book's done. It's just, it's set to come out in May. And obviously called Only You Know and I Know. It's supposedly slated to come out in May. Hopefully that will be the case. And we'll see.
I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to read it. So you're embarking on this tour. In fact, this, again, we're taping it Monday morning. I'm going to run it on Friday, and then I'll be seeing you in Fort Lauderdale the following Wednesday. You will have kicked off the tour at City Winery in Atlanta. Then you go down to Charleston, South Carolina, to the Charleston Music Hall. And then I'll see you in Fort Lauderdale. But then you're throughout Florida. You go to Vero Beach. You go to Orlando and Clearwater, Ponte Verde, and with the On the Blue cruise in the middle there, before you head up to Atlanta, Nashville, Kent, Ohio, Detroit, Nashville, Cincinnati, and Chicago. So I'm letting people know, because we've got listeners all over the place, that those are the dates of this tour.
And also Nashville, Tennessee, and also then we play Nashville, Indiana.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Oh, that's the two Nashvilles. I see Nashville, Tennessee on February 10th, and Nashville, Indiana on February 17th. Got it. Tell who's in the band. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I said who's in the band.
John Sambatero has been with me for, gosh, John is on almost 40 years. He's played with me. Ray Cardwell is on bass, pretty new. He's basically almost a year. And Tony Pathler's keyboards, who has played with me on and off over the last 7 or 8 years. He's back in the band. And then we just have a brand, which we're right now where I'm sitting on my bus here. And after this, I'll be jumping out to go rehearse with our new drummer, Marty Farah. Well, actually, he lives on Maui.
Oh, wow.
And so we're here rehearsing at some friends of mine. They have a beautiful big ranch up here in the mountains, and which I'm actually talking to them about finally maybe getting my festival together, which I've been trying to work on for years. So, trying to piece together the Feeling All Right Festival.
That's intriguing. So, who would be on your wish list to be in a part of the Feeling All Right Festival?
It's not going to be my thing. Is that I'm I've been trying to put together crews for the last 10 years, but I don't want just music.
Mm-hmm.
And if the music could probably be somewhat mixed. It's not going to be any one style, other than there won't be any rap music.
Okay. I'm with you on that.
Won't be any rap, but I want other things in there. See, I want to do comedy as well. Music, comedy, and some magic.
Ooh, that's intriguing.
Yeah, and I'd like to make it, more of a fun experience where, I think people, obviously, there's either blues festivals or jazz festivals or rock festivals or, people have, people's tastes vary other than just one genre of things. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of a festival, and probably would include yoga. My wife teaches yoga, is very into it. It's just a great little book. Too, called Down Dog for Road Dogs, since she's usually out in the road with me.
Love it.
And so that's what we're trying to discuss about maybe kicking this off in 2024. We'll see.
That would be great. I look forward to all of this. What can we expect on this tour? What I'm hoping for is a little bit of the stories that maybe are going to be in your book, along with the songs and telling us how they came, or is it just go through the music and play the rock and roll?
It's mostly the music. Goes from, obviously there's some traffic stuff in there, and then I try to pull stuff from my career, obviously, over the years. Obviously, there's always something that we didn't do that somebody wanted to hear, but
that's what happens when you've got a lot of great songs that we have known for years, right?
Yeah, well, I'm a little too old to be standing up on stage for 3 to 4 hours.
Well, Bruce Springsteen still does it. Just saying.
He's 76, either.
Right, that's true. Yeah, you got a few years on him. I want to play one more, another clip that, again, I did not know this was you until very recently, and you got to listen carefully to if it plays. Will it play from here? No, I've got to play it from here again. You're not playing guitar here. I want to ask you what instrument you're playing on this. Is it something called a Shenhai?
Oh, I don't know what you're playing because I can't hear.
Oh, you couldn't hear it. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the end of Street Fighting Man by the Rolling Stones.
Fighting Man, we're playing drums and a little wind instrument on the end there.
That's the it's the internet says it's something called the Shenhai that I'd never heard of before.
It's an Indian instrument. It's just a little bit on the end, but mostly I'm part of the myself, Brian, and Charlie are playing the drums on that track.
Wow. So tell us about the working with the Stones. How did that come about, and how long did you play with them? Just on one record or more?
I just was there for the set. I knew Brian Jones. Brian and I hang out together, so I knew Brian quite a bit. Everybody record used the same recording studios, same engineers. So it was, also London.
Mm.
Mostly, and everybody was there. So, you constantly bumped in or ran into or, sessions would overlap between groups. Mm-hmm. And so same engineer, same producer, Jimmy Miller. So, you know, you'd often go and hang out at someone's session.
Right. Ah, and that's when the magic was made, I guess.
That's all I was doing. It was like, well, hey, come, you know, Mason, come on, play this. Okay.
Do you have any favorites, that gems like that, that we might not know it's you playing on, but songs that you're particularly proud of?
I think probably over the years with the interviews, everybody pretty much knows what I played on and haven't played on. And if I missed anything, it's going to be in the book.
It'll be in the book.
But there's, you know, there's, yeah, I mean, they've all been, you know, that I was able to be on them have been great.
I'll bet. I'm very much looking forward to the book. Only you know and I know. It'll be out in May, we hope. I'll keep tabs on that and let people know. You know, I found you. Your website is davemasonmusic.com. And you're pretty, you engage with people on Facebook as well. Also, Dave Mason Music is your handle in all these places. I was reading on Facebook when you were talking about the tour that's starting this week. And somebody said, I saw you at the Miami Marine Stadium back in 1976. I was there. I was there. You know, okay. I couldn't remember where I had seen you. And I read that post. It's like, oh, my God, that's where it was. The Miami Marine Stadium was just a wonderful venue that is still sitting there, sort of like a ghost town. It's in disrepair. Miami doesn't know what to do with it. It's really a shame because what a great place that was. And I remember that show.
There's another great place, too. I played the last but one show. Yeah, the Marine Stadium. Exactly. Right. I played the last but one show that was ever done there.
Oh, wow. And that's probably, you know, one of the times I saw you. I saw you over the years. You know, I spent many years doing rock and roll radio in Los Angeles mostly. And so the memories get foggy, as I'm sure. I don't have to tell you. But I do know how much I've enjoyed your music through the years and what an honor this is. I'm so excited to see you on Wednesday night. And the show begins at 7. Is there an opening band or do you start at 7?
I think so. I'm not exactly sure, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, we'll get there early just to make sure. I get off the air at 6. We'll zip out to Fort Lauderdale because I don't want to miss a note. Dave Mason, what a treat this is. I'm so glad you're still touring, and I'm hoping you're doing it because you love it. I know that everything has changed. You know, like I said, I used to be on the radio, and these days I do the thing on the internet and work hopefully directly with listeners who support my program. What do you say to young people just starting out in the music industry today?
I mean, I guess if I was just starting out, I'd figure something out, but I have, the sad thing is the terrestrial radio is still a very powerful media. But there's nobody home.
Right.
And, you know, back when we were doing albums, I mean, DJs like yourself would often go, you know, you play a classic with Dave Mason, whatever, and you go, hey, you got to check out the new one here. And you'd spin it, you know, and you'd tell, and people would know. And that's how you're just throwing, it's like throwing shit up against a wall here these days. It's just, and you're in a worldwide supermarket called the internet. And
I'll tell you what's really frustrating is, especially for people like me, a frustrated old disc jockey doing talk radio now, is, you know, a lot of my audience finds the show on YouTube. Well, I can't play music on YouTube. I've been suspended from streaming more times than I can tell you because I played a few seconds of a song. I hope that doesn't happen from Along the Watchtower or Street Fighting Man, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did. You know, I don't know why the labels don't work with us and let me say, all right, I'm going to interview Dave Mason. I want to play a few of his songs. Let me pay to put those songs in my show, but there's no mechanism to even do that right now.
Yeah, it's the internet is a double-edged sword. It's a great little tool, but it's decimated intellectual property.
Yeah, because you have no controls over it. It's out there.
and no control, and everybody's stealing everything.
Yeah, and those of us who would like to do it legitimately, like, I want to play some of your songs for my listeners, but I can't. That's, you know, it's asinine. I should be able to pay a fee per song to put it in my show, and that doesn't happen. Instead, I just get blocked worldwide and maybe copyright violated, so I can't stream anymore. It is a conundrum that they're going to have to deal with. They should have dealt with it years ago.
Well, it'd be nice just, you know, for, you know, but again, it's probably money and profit. So that's why there's no DJs anymore on terrestrial radio. And it's just boring. It's just, you know, classic rock radio. They play it over and over, just the same crap that, you know, again and again and again. Everything you got at home already.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I know. You're living on the West Coast. You're living in California now?
I live in Nevada.
Oh, in Nevada. Okay. All right. I was good because the kind of radio, music radio that I did still exists in a handful of places, not Nevada. Yeah. There's a station in Chicago. There's a station in Philadelphia, you know, AAA. We were adventurous. We could play a classic Dave Mason song and say, listen to what he's doing now. Right. And those stations really don't exist anymore because we were niche.
No, it's tragic because for artists, and like I said, I don't really know. I mean, I think probably more so than it seems that for young artists, it's more, there's a big visual aspect tied to what you're doing as a young artist. I don't know any other way that you promote yourself, YouTube and the rest of the whatever, but straight up songs and stuff.
Are there any new artists that you found that you like, that you would like to champion their work?
A good friend of mine is Malcolm McDowell, and his son one of the only outlets that he can do, basically. I mean, he was with a label. They just gave up on it. I think he's on American Idol or one of those shows. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So that's that. You know, that's about it. Otherwise, I really have no idea how you get exposed anymore.
No, I don't either. I guess that, you know, we remember the old days, and thankfully, we still have the records and the music lives on forever. Dave Mason, you've given us many, many years of just incredible music, and you still continue to do it. And I thank you for that. The tour is in progress. It's the Endangered Species Tour. Is there the obvious reason for the title, the name of the tour?
Hey, you know, I mean, we just lost Christy McVie and Jeff.
I know.
Right in that bracket there somewhere.
I hear you. Well,
and obviously for me, it's a little tongue in cheek as well. So
of course. Well, thank you. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for touring. I know that the show in Fort Lauderdale is just about sold out, but go anyway. I know there's a few resale tickets available, and there's all those other dates. So DaveMasonMusic.com, the entire itinerary is there. Seeing Dave Mason is a treat. So if you get the chance, take advantage of it. Dave, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for joining us today, and hopefully I get to say hi on Wednesday night.
You are welcome, Nicole. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Dave Mason, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. I know, look, we got off to a slow start. I think it got, you know, he warmed up. Maybe he just woke up because it was Monday morning. But I think once we connected, I think it was Star, the dog. Dogs always bring people together. All right. And now we're done. It is the weekend. I will post the video, the Feeling All Right video, on the page where I post the whole show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/1-20-23. And I'll embed the video there of the Feeling All Right by the Quarantines. Sorry, I had to cut it off. I was afraid YouTube was going to stop the video, and I didn't want that to happen. All right, so we're done. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Happy Chinese New Year, Year of the Rabbit. Tomorrow, talk to people. Use your voice because it's the day that free speech was killed 13 years ago. And Sunday, you know, keep in mind a woman's right to do with her body what she should have providence over, if that's the right word. It's Friday. I'm done. Thank you again. I'll leave you with the news. I'll see you Monday. Jason Leopold will be here. And that's it. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to a weekend filled with notable anniversaries, some worth celebrating, others not so much. Friday marks the second anniversary of Joe Biden's inauguration as our nation's 46th president, which...
Sorry, I hit the wrong button again. Hold on, hold on, hold on.
President, which finally put an end to the four-year nightmare that was the Trump administration. Saturday falls on January 21st, marking an awful day for free speech. In 2010, 13 years ago, the Supreme Court handed down its decision in the landmark Citizens United versus FEC. The court held 5-4 that the free speech clause of the First Amendment prohibits the government from restricting independent expenditures for political campaigns by corporations, including nonprofit corporations, labor unions, and other associations. Basically, they threw the door wide open to dark money and unbridled super PACs. Then, to make this anniversary even worse, a few hours after that decision came down...
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
On January 21st, 2010, Air America Radio filed for bankruptcy and ceased operations. Sunday marks the 50th anniversary of the passage of Roe v. Wade. That's the Supreme Court ruling that said a person may choose to have an abortion until a fetus becomes viable, based on the right to privacy contained in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. Viability means the ability to live outside the womb, which usually happens between 24 and 28 weeks after conception. Sadly, today's extreme court overturned Roe, just shy of this 50th anniversary, in a decision leaked in May, weeks before it would officially be announced. Well, we learned on Thursday that the court's investigators were unable to identify just who leaked the decision. Meanwhile, protesters will gather in March in support of reproductive rights, as they have every year on this anniversary, this time under the umbrella of Bigger Than Roe. And on the other side, anti-abortion protesters gathering Friday at their 50th annual March for Life with the theme, Next Steps, Marching in a Post-Roe America. Happy weekend, everyone. President Biden on Thursday made his first public remarks since a few classified documents from his time as vice president were found at his private Washington, D.C. office and at his home in Wilmington, Delaware. He was asked about not revealing earlier that those documents had been discovered. He said, "I think you're going to find there's nothing there. I have no regrets." The first documents were found on November 2nd, days before the midterm elections, but they weren't publicly revealed until last week when CBS first reported their existence. The White House has pledged full cooperation with the investigation, but is largely downplaying the political effects of the probe. It does need to be stated, though, that this is a completely different situation than the hundreds of documents that the former President Trump took, refused to return, even after 18 months of negotiations with the National Archives, and he still lied about them. Just saying. Prosecutors on Thursday announced that they plan to charge actor Alec Baldwin with involuntary manslaughter in the fatal shooting of cinematographer Helena Hutchins on the set of the movie Rust in New Mexico in 2021. The film's armorer will also be charged, but the first assistant director has agreed to plead guilty to the charge of negligent use of a deadly weapon. Prosecutors said they knew pretty close to the beginning of their probe into the shooting that criminal charges would be filed. And with everything else going on, this one kind of flew under the radar. But a federal judge in Florida on Thursday ordered the former president and his lawyer, Alina Haba, to pay almost $1 million in sanctions to 31 defendants in a lawsuit they filed last year, alleging a vast conspiracy against Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential election. U.S. District Judge Donald Middlebrooks throughout the lawsuit in September. He fined the attorney Haba $50,000 to pay the legal fees of one of the defendants, Charles Dolan. This $938,000 penalty will be divided among the other defendants, including Trump's 2016 Democratic rival,
Hillary Clinton. Here's just part of the judge's scathing ruling. Quote, "The lawsuit was completely frivolous, both factually and legally, and was brought in bad faith for an improper person. No reasonable lawyer would have filed it." And finally,
speak out. You got to speak out against the madness.
Singer, songwriter, guitarist David Crosby, an original member of the Byrds, a founder of Crosby, Stills & Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and all other permutations, has died. It was just 8 months ago that Crosby officially retired, saying he was done performing live, that he was too old. Though he did say in December that he had changed his mind. Anyway, he continued recording at what he called a startling rate. He said, "Now I'm 80 years old, so I'm going to die fairly soon. That's how that works. And so I'm trying really hard to crank out as much music as I possibly can, as long as it's really good. Hopefully we'll get to hear some of that music that he recorded in his final years." David Crosby was 81 years old. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports on the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll make a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button. I don't know why the file got cut off, but it did, so I finished it live. All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'll see you Monday. Bye.